providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back. Continuing on with KER Politics. You know, today is kind of a red letter day for Big Al. Big Al has an old friend of his, a guy who he met a number of years ago. We used to do radio together, Michael Hartfield. Michael is a good guy. I haven't seen him for a long time. He's now making his home down in Central Oregon. Michael started Channel 12 News, was the weatherman on the Channel 12 News in Portland, Oregon, was a weatherman on the station in Eugene, Oregon. Michael and I had a very successful radio show for a while. Michael is perhaps more of a political junkie than I am, and he's going to be coming on the show probably a couple times a month, maybe not as long as he's on for today. Today we're going to devote the last half hour of the show to Mr. Hartfield. Michael, how you doing, bud?
I am well, Al. Just one correction. I was on the 10 o'clock news on, started that on KPTV, Channel 12 in Portland, and I did weather in Eugene, so you're right on that. But so I was in the news for a while.
There you go. And you did very well. Michael, I want to talk overall about some things that are going on right now in our country. I want to say politically and also philosophically. Now, you and I are roughly the same age. We've known each other for a long time. My contention, Mike, is that this whole thing in terms of the liberal movement, if it feels good, do it movement, et cetera, started probably back in the, I would say, early 60s. You know, I realized that we were in trouble economically when Fisher Volvo in Portland, Oregon, they were advertising U2 in the Oregonian. They had full-page ads. U2 can afford to drive a brand-new Volvo, as we are now offering seven-year finance contracts. To me, that's the epitome of something for nothing. That's the epitome, in my opinion, of absolute irresponsibility from a fiduciary standpoint. I mean, you know, kids making back in those days maybe $75,000 to $100,000 a year. You know, they were going out and buying mega mansions because they could get finance. They were, you know, two Volvos in the driveway, etc., etc. And then look what happened come 2008. You know, we had a major collapse here. When do you think the degradation of moral values, Michael, really started in the United States?
Well, it seems to me, Al, that I was looking at a film last night of Woodstock. You remember Woodstock?
Oh, of course.
And they just the looks on their faces and the things they were saying. It was a bunch of young people who knew more than anybody else.
Right.
I mean, they had a license on the truth. And I think a lot of it started with that post-World War II baby boom generation. And I think it's carried forward. It's now metastasized, if you will. It's more now than it was then, and the current population. Well, wait a minute, Bob, let me back up. Those folks raised their children in that Dr. Spock style,
right?
Where all you do is encourage, 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 no negativity, and then that helicopter parenting. Well, where the mother hangs over the kids all the time and says, "Don't do this and don't do that, and be careful, watch this," and the kid never learns consequences, thinks he always does very well, expects the world to be his stage, so to speak. I think all that came about in the last, you know, what, 40 or 50 years, but starting, I think, after the war.
You know, I have to agree with you on that one, Mike. After the war, I think perhaps is a little better date other than perhaps the early 60s. Although, you know, in the early 60s, in the Vietnam era, those were the days when the feel good, do it. If it feels good, do it. You know, damn the consequences, et cetera, et cetera. That's when it all started. I mean, that's about the time that the subject of free abortions got really, really big. That's about the time that cohabitating with your girlfriend or boyfriend or whatever started to become really big. And that's the time when personal debt in the United States, whether it's, you know, secured by an automobile, whether it's unsecured debt in the form of credit cards or what have you, that's about the time that all hell broke loose. And it took about 40 years, I would say until about 2000, before that problem became very, very serious. You know, I was doing radio back in the 90s. You and I did some radio from, what, I guess, 1999 on, but back in the 90s, I was in Portland, Oregon, and I was doing what I would call beige business radio. By that, I mean I was interviewing, you know, CEOs of companies, Boeing, Microsoft, et cetera, with really no thought of the consequences of the actions that were going on right now. And I realized in about 1999, 2000, that it really, the United States society was really facing some very serious consequences. And the bottom fell out, really, I would have to say, in about 2007, 2008. Anybody could get a mortgage on a house on the Columbia River, whatever they wanted, as long as they had some sort of income that could show, as long as they could make, damn near just make an X on a loan application, they could get credit for almost anything they wanted. You know, we talk about morality going in the toilet in the United States. Everybody immediately jumps to the conclusion of sexual immorality. But I want to talk with you first, Michael, about fiscal immorality, because that's what's killing this country. I mean, look at the debt today, man.
Well, Al, I remember 20 years ago, we were hearing that the amount of personal debt carried in America would sink the economy.
Right.
Well, it didn't quite do it. It didn't do it, but it was big then and it's big now. But you know, 2008 was that whole thing was very interesting. And generally, I think it's misunderstood. The government had a very strong role in that kind of indebtedness. Those mortgages came about because the government ordered the banks to make loans to people who could not pay them back.
Right.
And then they got interest groups to boycott the banks and hold them hostage if they wanted to grow the bank and build banks elsewhere. They would protest and they wouldn't be able to get it done if the bank didn't make these loans. Then they were in trouble with the public and with the government. So the government forced those loans, forced the banks to figure out how to deal with them when they packaged them in those securities and sold them. And then, of course, the bottom fell out. They fell apart because people couldn't afford the mortgages. Many of them had that the clauses, you know, where they started out really cheap and then stepped up as time went on. And when they stepped up, they couldn't afford them.
Well, Michael,
but I think that was primarily government induced.
Do you remember back when I was a director of American Pacific Bank? I'm sure you do. But the interesting thing about those days is, being a director, I sat on the loan committee a number of times, and I remember some of the loan applications that came across to our committee. They were absolutely ridiculous. They were not based on anything. They weren't based on economic fundamentals. They were based on absolutely nothing other than perhaps race or gender. And you're right, we were absolutely forced by the Federal Reserve to make those loans. If we did not make the loans, we would have been in trouble. We would have experienced numerous fines. And I remember when our chairman, Fai Chan, who is now a highfalutin financier in Hong Kong, said, you know what, we're going to sell the bank. This is stupid. This cannot last. And you know what? We did sell the bank. And many of the banks in the Portland area had serious problems. We all did not have a serious problem because we were no longer the owners of the bank. Ladies and gentlemen, stick around. I'm going to be right back with my friend Michael Hartfield.